Two Designers Walk Into a Bar is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network.
For more information about our show or to discover more podcasts you'll enjoy, visit evergreenpodcasts.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everyone. We're going to be taking a couple months off as we prepare for our upcoming season. Enjoy this episode nugget from our archives and visit our website for the full story.
You can also join us on Patreon for exclusive content not found in our regular podcast feed.
Hey everyone, it's Elliot.
And Todd. Welcome to Two Designers Walk Into a Bar, an ongoing conversation about pop culture and iconic design.
Todd, this week marks a seminal moment in music and pop culture.
Right. Of course. The Titanic soundtrack finally hit number one.
I was actually thinking about when Bob Dylan arrived in New York in 1961 after dropping out of the University of Minnesota, playing a show at Cafe Wa in Greenwich Village.
All right, sure. If you want to get all bohemian.
You know, it's funny you should use that word. Dylan reminds me of the Beats, which is one of my favorite time periods. So let's take a few minutes to jump into our origin story about that movement and how impactful it was on pop culture.
All right, let's listen.
I need to also state clearly that aside from war and aside from atomic bombs, there was a whole group of people that the Leave It to Beaver era really sort of sucked for, and that, of course, was African Americans. It was black people, right? So
the civil rights
movement was starting up in earnest, and these pushes against inequality. So you have this consumer culture happening. You have these rules that are being followed. You have a lot of folks who are being told not to question too much and just don't rock the boat and follow the program and everything will be okay. And there was really just a certain subset of people who thought all of this was bullshit.
All of that sort of conformity and change.
The program, the man, right? Okay. Like, don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me how to live my life. Like, let me make my own decisions, right?
I love controversy. tell me more about that.
So when you think about the Beats, one of the core things to think about is they reject the sort of standard narrative values, these things that are you're told to value in American culture and post-World War II culture. Like, this is what's important.
Standard narrative values. That's like...
Sorry, am I being too academic for you?
You might be, yeah. Can you break it down for me a little bit? I'm not sure I fully understand, but
yeah. If you have money, you need to buy these things, and that will make you happy.
Oh, okay.
You have to.
You need money,
and you need money because that money will allow you to get stuff, and that stuff means that you know your time is filled doing these things, right? Like watching TV,
right?
And just really, they didn't feel that self-worth was tied up in how much money you made or what things you owned or just all these kind of signal markers in pop culture. Like, oh, I'm going to start with a Chevy and then I'm going to go to the Buick and then I'm going to go to the Oldsmobile and then I'm going to go to the Cadillac. And that's when my neighbor sees the Cadillac. That's when I've really arrived. You know, that whole thing, right? Those sorts of corporate programs. But then... Thinking of going back to religion for a second, these folks also were questioning that. They were questioning their own spirituality. Keep in mind, you know, some of these folks had served in World War II. They'd been overseas. They'd seen the horrors of war. And after you see cities leveled and you stare death in the face, you might not think, oh, I think I'll just have a house and just settle down. Things are much more existential, right? Like,
right. Why
are we here? What's the human condition? So you start to think about that exploration that happens through not only Western religions, but also Eastern religions, too.
Yeah. Okay. So that there was a reaction to the rise of Christianity from the Beats.
Exactly.
They were exploring other religions, Eastern religions, as you said, and also they were kind of not buying the whole God is smiling on the U.S. because we're great people, because they saw bad things that happened.
That, and I think they kind of figured out, maybe we got lucky.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, that's a good one too, yeah.
Right? You know, it's probably an element of chance a little bit, right? So you have this rejection of materialism. You have them thinking about the human condition. Now, there's a couple of other things I want to mention really quickly, because, of course, these often get credited to the hippies, but in a lot of ways, the Beats really lay the groundwork for the hippies. So, sorry, hippies, but the Beats were first with things like self-medicating through psychedelic drugs.
Yes.
Right? And then also sexual liberation and exploration, too, right?
Oh, okay. Okay, so the Beats were getting their freak on, and the hippies just kind of picked it up
They were past the playbook, so to speak.
All right, so we already know that Jack Kerouac was called the King of the Beats.
That's
not
right.
The King of the Beast, but the King of the Beats. And who else were some players in this scene as it was getting started?
Yeah, great question. Okay, so yes, Jack Kerouac, definitely the most popular guy, and I say guy, really all of the folks involved in this, by and large, were men. There were a couple of women. I mentioned one earlier who was hanging around Kerouac when he was reading his review, but by and large, this was a male-dominated thing. So there were two other people, in addition to Kerouac, who were sort of considered the three legs of the stool, I guess, or the pillars of the Beat movement, and those folks are Allen Ginsberg and William Burroughs.
Sounds familiar. Sounds like names we've heard before.
Definitely, and these jokers really started to figure into pop culture in a major way in the 80s and going into the 90s, and we'll talk about that later.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So each of these guys, of course, had, just like Kerouac with On the Road, they had their own seminal works, right? Because you have to be known for something. So Kerouac's On the Road, as we mentioned earlier, came out in September 57. Allen Ginsberg had an epic poem called Howl that came out a year earlier in 56. And then Burroughs had a book called Naked Lunch that came out a few years later in 1959. All right?
All right. So they were, and those, I've heard of all of those. Those were big deals in the literary world, I guess?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing. So Viking was the publisher that released On the Road.
Okay.
And apparently, if you read about the original, the scroll, right, the quote-unquote scroll I mentioned earlier, the bane of Truman Capote's existence, when that was turned into Viking and they originally looked at it, apparently real names were used and there was much, much more explicit material in terms of sexual dalliances, shall we say. Okay?
Okay.
Now, Viking basically said to Kerouac, they're like, look, if you want to publish this book through us, you're going to have to tone some of this stuff down. You're going to have to take some of it out. You're going to have to change some of these names. So if you go back and you read the original On the Road, the unedited one that was released much later, it's much, much more raw, apparently.
Oh, okay. The scroll tells all.
Yes. why did Viking do this? Why did they say this? Well, you could argue they were prudish, right? And they're like, hey, we want to get this in the hands of middle America. They'll never go for this. But it turns out they actually had a pretty good reason. So Howl the year before, and then Naked Lunch later, 2 years after On the Road came out. So you have one book that a year earlier was the focus of an obscenity trial.
Oh, okay. Howl. That was Howl, right?
Yeah, that was Howl. And then 2 years later, Naked Lunch is a focus of another obscenity trial. So they're kind of the bread on this sandwich. But Kerouac managed to dodge that bullet by listening to his editors a little bit.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to tell a friend, leave a review on your platform of choice, and subscribe so you don't miss a thing.
We're always here for you at twodesignerswalkintoabar.com.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo. And for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
Two Designers Walk Into a Bar is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network.
For more information about our show or to discover more podcasts you'll enjoy, visit evergreenpodcasts.com.